75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Well, we're broadcasting from Roswell, New Mexico, and this is Jerry Pippin with the UFO Files. We have Ann Druppel with us. And Ann, it's great to meet you in person. We've talked on the air before on telephone, but it's great to see you and meet
you in person. It's great to meet you in person.
She has the book, How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abductions, and we'll get into that in a moment. Interesting book. The last interview that we had before you went to the X Conference, we touched on that briefly. But you're actually speaking about this subject here at the conference, right?
Well, how to defend yourself against alien abduction is my major talk. Mm-hmm. But I can also bring in my new book about James McDonald.
Yeah, and we talked about the McDonald story, which is incredible. Here's a man, you met him, I guess, originally when it was NICAP.
Well, he would come and work with our NICAP subcommittee in Los Angeles. So we knew him quite well.
You've been in this field for some time.
I think it's 46 years now. Might even be 47.
Hey, I found somebody who's been there longer than me, but not much. NICAP, kind of strange way it kind of just folded up. I guess it was infiltrated by the FBI.
Well, it was... Wasn't it the CIA?
Oh, the CIA.
Or was it the FBI?
Well, we're not sure. You've probably known more about it than I do.
I'll have to reread my book. Once you write a book, it goes out of your mind,
yeah,
and you start thinking about
it. I understand.
But it was infiltrated by government agents. Who got high positions on the board of governors, and they more or less just kicked out Don Kehoe and the assistant director, Gordon Lohr. And after that, it just... I believe it was the CIA. After that, it was taken over by secret CIA agents. They were all secret CIA agents who had wormed their way in.
Now, you know, we talked about McDonald. He was found in the desert, and they ruled it, I guess, inconclusive or suicide, perhaps.
Well, it did. In the autopsy record, it did not say suicide. Mm-hmm. It said something about, excessive bleeding from so-and-so, but... there was a gunshot wound to the head.
And you felt that you were highly he was highly unlikely to be a person that would commit suicide. You felt he's full of life.
Well, we were very surprised, but his family knew him better, and he had
yeah, well, his severe wife, his attack. Wife accepted the fact that it was depression problem.
Yes, it was. She did, and mm-hmm. so did his academic colleagues at the University of Arizona at Tucson. But there was that was one hypothesis I put in, mm-hmm. Firestorm, Dr. James E. McDonald's Fight for UFO Science is the name of the book. And I put the hypothesis of self-inflicted suicide by a normal depression, because that was when some of the people I interviewed said, but then people in the field, in the UFO field who had worked with him, could not believe that. And he had been subject to what I call an orchestrated attack of weird things that happened to him.
I remember we talked about all of a sudden there were McDonald sightings all over the country, and he hadn't necessarily been there or whatever.
Yes, an impersonator was mm-hmm. going around with his ID saying to UFO witnesses, do not talk, because the government doesn't want you to, which of course is just opposite to what McDonald was saying.
And it figures that's the way they work.
Uh-huh. And his briefcase was stolen off an aircraft, and it was filled with confidential military sightings that he'd gotten from the West Coast, and things like this.
Now he worked, I believe, if I remember correctly, University of Arizona, Tucson, right?
Yes.
I mean, he was at
the Institute of Atmospheric Physics on the campus.
And but before that, he was employed with the Navy Department of Research.
He was with a cryptographic unit in the Pacific area during the war with Japan. He was a lieutenant in the U.S. Navy, so he was a highly intelligent, brilliant man. and most probably a genius, although he never wanted to be called such. He was a very humble man as well.
Well, and obviously, you knew him back in those days, and he had a great personality, because that's one of the things that attracted you to writing this book. You felt, if I remember correctly, when we talked, you felt that it was some story that needed to be told.
Yes, it had needed to be told for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started archiving his files around 1991. And then his wife, Betsy, his widow, slowly began to accept me as a possibility to write an authorized biography of him, because she saw that I could be objective. And we're quite good friends now.
Of course, folks, before we get off the air here, we'll give you the name of that book, and also we'll talk about a current book again, and you can order those at any bookstore, and we also have a link on our website, so you can order them as well.
And Amazon.com.
Too, right, of course. Amazon.com, of course. And
direct from the publisher.
Now, Anne, you've been in this field, as you said, 46 years, you thought. What's changed? What's changed over the years? I mean, the technology, naturally, but I'm thinking more in terms of the sightings and the stories themselves.
When I joined the field in 1957, it was with NICAP, mm-hmm. National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena.
And Don Kehoe
was the director, and I had read DeKehoe's books and admired him greatly. And he was a very objective man. And so I saw that I could do some research there that would be wholly unlike what the contactees in the area were saying. California was filled with contacts. NICAP was doing very objective work, and it was totally unlike what the contactees in California were saying. And these were a group of people who claimed that they were being taken for rides around the moon and Venus and up to other planets, you know, occupants of UFOs.
Are we talking about George Adamski and that group?
George Adamski, Daniel Fry, oh, so many of them. But they're
Did you ever go out there in the desert, out there by... Well, it's up in the high desert there by the Giant Rock?
Giant Rock. I went to Giant Rock once.
Okay.
Uh-huh. In fact, we're going back there.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, I have to talk to you. I'd like to go there. I have a good friend that doesn't live very far from there. Lives in Landers.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I read so long.
Uh-huh. But we're not going back there with contactees. We're going back there for a sky watch.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Sky, you can really see a lot of things. Now, sky watch, we've got to get into that here a little bit. We've got to talk about that, because some things are happening there, too. The skywalk.
But anyway, NICAP was so totally objective. Their research was more in the order of what I had been trained to do. I was trained as a social caseworker, where you researched and you wrote down your writings, and you had a way of determining what you felt was right or wrong about what the person was saying. So. It was an objective type of research that I wanted to do on UFOs, because I had been interested since.
Didn't you get interested in one of the things there in LA? Was it Cahuenga Canyon or someplace? Where was it?
It was a group of women in the Tujunga Canyon.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes, that was my first.
See,
book.
I'm not from California, so I mispronounced it. Forgive me.
That was my first book. The co-author was D. Scott Rogo, the famous parapsychologist, and we wrote about this group of five ladies, who all of whom had experiences and abductions in the Tujunga Canyon area. But the strange thing was, we wrote the book in 1980. It was called The Tujunga Canyon Contacts. It made quite a stir in the field. But it took me about 8 years before I realized that two of those five women were instinctive resistors, I call them. In other words, they could fend off these so-called abductors and get rid of the scenarios altogether.
That kind of brings us to the book.
That's what led me to write this book.
Mm-hmm.
I did an additional 5 years research on resistors, and it turned into this book.
So you're a firm believer that you can resist these people?
Well, of course, I'm not an abductee myself, but I go by the data that people give me.
Yes.
And the hypothesis that you can resist and fend off these so-called alien abductors, whatever they are, is very strong, because some people who want to learn how to fend them off can learn by using the 9 techniques that are described in my book, How to Defend Yourself.
Before you get off this time, I'm going to ask you to tell me a couple of those techniques.
Sure.
Because last time we did basically a whole show about McDonald, Professor mm-hmm. McDonald. But mm-hmm. I'm going to take a break, and I'll be right back. As you know, this lady, Ann Druffel, she knows her UFOlogy, and I'm going to tell you something else about her, too, folks. She's experienced in paranormal experiences. In fact, she worked for a famous institute, and we'll get into that in a little bit as well. This is Jerry Pippin, and you're listening to the UFO Files.
If you're looking for adventure, information, and entertainment on the internet, one stop fits all, JerryPippin.com. At JerryPippin.com, you'll find multimedia entertainment at its best. Almost 2 million people are enjoying hours of entertainment and information. Hit it now, www.JerryPippin.com.
The UFO Files, Jerry Pippin, broadcasting from Roswell, New Mexico. We have Ann Druffel from Southern California, and we met halfway, I guess. I live
yes.
in Oklahoma. It's not too far. Actually, you came a little further, but you only came, about 1,000 miles, and I came about 600. So,
okay.
You came further. I want to talk to you a little bit about defending yourself against alien abductions, because the last time we just touched on it, on the last show we did, and they need to buy the book to see all the details, but maybe you could skim over something. What should you do, or should you not do? I mean, when you have one of these abductions, I mean, it seems to me that most of these abductions happen, and maybe I'm wrong, when you're in a dream state or something.
The huge majority of abductions, if not all, occur in an altered state of consciousness. It is not waking consciousness. It is not, they are not fully awake. Like when you see a UFO in the sky and a jet pilot is chasing it, he's fully awake. Mm-hmm. He's seeing a physical object. But abductees generally perceive the scenario of the abductor coming to get them while they're either asleep or by a lonely road trying to catch a nap at night, or some of them, they experience what is called road hypnosis while driving along a darkened highway, and that is an altered state.
Yeah, we do a sightings report every week, and there's lots of those come up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it, and then it was leaving. And obviously there's something missing there. And
yes.
So how do you do this? I mean, you see something coming like that. Is there a way to defend yourself? Or what would you suggest? And what do you say in the book about it?
Well, there's one case that Bud Hopkins very, very strangely has brought forth, that this family was driving along a lonely road, and a UFO, blocked their way, and the aliens came out of the craft and tried to get through the windows. And the father was so outraged. He was protective of his son in the car, and he said, "You go away, or my God will kill you."
Kind of like,
and the aliens left.
Kind of like, "We rebuke you in the name of Jesus Christ," or whatever, the same type thing.
Yes.
You hear those kind of stories all the time.
That's one of the resistance techniques, is prayers.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, I don't try to teach religion in the book.
Yeah,
that's
I
only one of the resistance techniques.
I understand. Can you just say, "Just get away, I don't want to go"?
Did you say
that?
Yes. That would be probably Righteous Anger.
Do you think you still have it in your computer?
Mm-hmm. Righteous Anger. I like that term. Describe what you mean by that. That's a good term. I love words.
In the book, there is a lady called Morgana Van Clausen, and she lives near me in San Marino in California. And she had been bothered by these aliens for several months, and she felt that she might have been abducted by them. And she had a son and a husband. And so one night, she was sleeping in bed along with her husband, and this alien appears again by her bedside. And she was just so outraged at the fact that the thing was violating her rights, which is called righteous anger.
Okay.
It's not hatred, you know, it's just defending your own rights. She jumped out of the bed and pushed the creature, and the creature fell backwards and vanished. And here she was, she woke up entirely. And she was standing there, you know, out of the bed, no creature around. It was as if she had pushed him while in the altered state in which she perceived him.
So that's one way to do it. Righteous anger, mm-hmm. folks. Remember mm-hmm. that, if it ever happens to you. Well, a lot of these things, how do these aliens come right into your room like that? I mean, that's amazing to me, I guess. Bud Hopkins, you were talking about him. You've written a book recently about how scientifically that might be possible. And he went into great detail. I did a lot of research on it. But you've been studying this phenomenon for a long time. That's pretty common. They just kind of show up, right? But at the same time, here's this other man. The aliens were outside his car, and they didn't get in. That you were talking about earlier.
Yes, there are a few cases where it does not seem to be an altered state entirely.
Mm-hmm.
But most abductions, you know, 99% of them do occur in an altered state. And it seems, from my hypothesis, which I present in the book, my data indicates that these creatures live perhaps not in our physical space-time, but in some kind of interdimensional realm around our Earth, and that's the way that they can appear to vanish or to appear, to materialize or dematerialize, to walk through walls. You know, when you're in an altered state, your walls are not in physical space-time, and a creature in an interdimensional realm can appear to walk through your walls. I'm not a scientist.
But I understand what you're saying. I get mm-hmm. the general idea, mm-hmm. and that leads me to some of the subjects I want to talk to you before we get off the air. About this Paranormal Institute, or whatever you were, it's pretty famous. What'd you tell me about
it? It was the Mobius Society.
Okay.
And it had been in operation for several years when I joined it as a researcher and a consultant.
And what did they basically investigate?
They investigated the human consciousness, other realms of human consciousness besides our physical space-time, like the psychic abilities, the ability to heal psychically. The ability to, remote view, all sorts of parapsychological.
Remote viewing, you know, seems fairly new to a lot of us, but that idea has been around for a while.
Well, remote viewing is really no more different from a natural psychic, you see, who perceives things which are not in physical space-time. The remote viewer perceives things the same way, only under a more scientifically grounded environment.
Now, let's talk about psychic ability. You investigated that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think's going on there exactly with psychics? Why is it, can everybody or could everyone, if they were so inclined or attuned or open, become psychic? Or is it a special gift? Or what do you think's happening here?
Well, parapsychologists believe that perhaps the psychic ability is endemic in the human race, that most people do not recognize it. But the psychics who develop this ability, they have it from childhood, but they develop it afterwards as adults. And these are the true psychics that are really powerful in deriving information that is not in physical space-time.
The police departments use psychics. A lot of people use psychics. So.
Yes.
I've always been curious about that, exactly why one individual can have a pretty good record of developing scenarios or knowing what's happening. And of course, we all know about, somebody you're attuned to, somebody you love, whatever, something happens to them, you wake up in the middle of the night, an hour later you call if they've been hurt or whatever.
Yes, that happens to a lot of people. I don't know the percentage of the population, but percentage of the population who have had intuitive experiences is very high. They may have had one or two or ten experiences during their life, but they have never developed the ability because they probably never knew how to, did not have a proper teacher. But even I had an intuitive thing the other day. I don't know if it's worthwhile, but
You're going to have to try me here now. You got my curiosity going.
My bathroom sink needed fixing, and we could not find tile that was 35 years old to match the tile that was damaged. And so I woke up one day knowing that I should look in my husband's work closet. My husband died 2.5 years ago.
Yes, we talked about that on the air.
But to look in his work closet for tile that he had kept.
And it was there.
When the bathroom was made, there were exactly as many tiles
as you needed,
as my handyman needed. Eight tiles.
Incredible. With that, we'll take a commercial break. We'll be back in a moment. Ann Druppel is our guest. The book is How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction. And, of course, she has some other work. She's been working in this field for a long time, and we're going to talk about that when we come back. I'm Jerry Pippin. This is the UFO Find.
If you've been a regular listener to us, you know we've talked about carbohydrates and how they help cells communicate. Glycobiology and nutrition have never really been adequately investigated together. I mean, if you pick up a nutrition book, all you read about are essential vitamins, minerals, proteins, and fats. Sugars are currently recognized only as a source of energy, not as being essential to good health. In fact, the food that most of us eat has only two sugars, mainly because it's not vine ripened. The cells use six other sugars that are used by cells to communicate. That must be manufactured by the body or obtained from dietary supplements. Glyconutrients quickly provide the six other sugars for our body's cells. Research going back to November of 1998 shows that some of these glyconutrients and the cell composition is more common than anybody thinks. Dr. Catherine Frisbee would like you to click on our healthy food banner on our website and get more information about this. It could mean all the difference in your quality of life.
This is the UFO Files from Roswell, New Mexico. We have Ann Druppel with us from Southern California. And we're talking about the book that she's written, How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction. And I remember when we talked last time, when I had you on the phone, and we talked about these alien abductions and where these aliens came from, were they outer space, but you have another theory, I think, right?
Well, it's a hypothesis that fits in with what Jacques Vallée has written about.
She's very scientific, Roberta. I'm talking to our producer here. She won't let me use that word theory. I tried last time, too. It's a hypothesis each time. Mm-hmm. And she's very nice in correcting me each time. Okay, let's talk about the hypothesis.
Mm-hmm. That is pre-theory, you see.
We went through this one time before. Okay.
And then as you prove more and more, then it can
becomes
become
a theory.
Okay. Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, let's talk about your hypothesis then.
Most of the researchers and people involved in the abduction field believe that these abductors are physical extraterrestrials from the physical craft called UFOs. Now, and that they are technologically superior to us, and that since they have decided to come down to Earth and abduct human beings and do with them what they want in their spacecraft, I won't go into detail, that there's nothing they can do about it. But I have found from Dahunga Canyon contacts originally that the 20 to 25% of abductees or experiencers, as some like to be called, are instinctive resistors and know how to get rid of the creatures, to tell them to go away or to wake themselves up from the altered state in which they are perceiving these scenarios. Now, this indicates to me, like Jacques Vallée has written and Dr. Eddie Bullard, that these creatures might be what is called in the Quran, in the Muslim Bible, the third order of creation, or what the Irish call the Shi, which are the fairy folk, which the little things with wings. I mean, the fairies are not nice. Lots of fairies are not nice. They're good and bad. The jinns are good and bad. And it seems that every culture down through the millennia have been bothered by abducting creatures who are sexually harassing and harassing in other ways, who shapeshift, who can materialize and dematerialize. They are described in philosophical, theological, and historical works down through the centuries in every culture. And a third order of creation makes more sense to me than anything else.
So they are not demons.
Uh-huh. They are not angels or devils. They are another order of creation, but one that shares the earth plane with us. I mean, it shares the earth with us, but on another realm of being other than our physical space-time.
Now, we talked about that last time, and I brought up the demons or devils or angels, and you don't feel they're either one of those. They're just an extra dimension of people or something.
Of beings. Mm-hmm. They are deceptive by nature, but they are good and bad. There are good jinns, there are bad jinns. But it's hard to tell the difference, you see.
If you go by literature, sometimes they masquerade as good when they're bad, and vice versa.
Exactly. But the Quran says that Solomon was given seven jinns to help build his temple. You see, Solomon's temple. Mm-hmm. So I suppose some of them are good.
Yes. That leads to my next question that I wanted to get to was, do you believe there are any extraterrestrials from other places too, or is it all just this dimensional shift or whatever you want to call these people?
Well, since the very early days of the UFO field, about 1949, 1950, there were reports of UFO landings with occupants involved close by the landed craft. But these creatures invariably did not want humans to approach them. They would jump back into their UFO and take off if witnesses came close. You see, that they acted directly opposite to what this abducting type acts.
So we actually may be talking about apples and oranges, two different things here.
Yes, there may be physical occupants connected with physical UFOs, which traverse Earth's atmosphere.
Well, the Chamber of Commerce in New Mexico will be glad to hear you say that. They've built quite an industry here, and evidently they've had quite a few crashes here. I've had reports up to 10 over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So
And the reports of frozen bodies from those crashes would be physical occupants. They would not be the abducting types which vanish and, you know, materialize and dematerialize.
But you really want to draw the line before I refer to these people as fallen angels or demons or good angels or whatever. You think it's just a different type of situation altogether?
I think it's a third order of creation. Yes, because the Irish speak of the third order of creation. The early medieval Catholic theologians spoke of the third order of creation, as the Muslims did, you see. So there's good evidence to indicate that there is another order of creation involved with our world.
Well, if you came out of your altered state and you have one of these beings in your room and you held up a cross, would it make a difference? I mean, you know, we're getting into cheap horror movies here, but at the same time, I wonder. I mean, like you said earlier, if you beseech them, why sometimes they leave. So maybe there's something to all of these fables we hear and all this fiction and all these gothic stories. They may be based in fact.
Well, you said if you wake up from your altered state,
yes,
and see the creature and hold up the cross, the creatures are perceived while you are in the altered state.
Well,
and the trick is to break the altered state yourself, so that the creature
and
vanishes.
Then if you wake yourself up, then
exactly that. This is the trick. All of the nine techniques in this book are related to ending the altered state yourself. But you must be of a very strong-minded personality. You must have a strong sense of your own rights against intrusion. And this is what most abductees and experiencers do not have. Most of them are very, very frightened by the look of the creature, because it looks like something from a UFO, an extraterrestrial. And this third order of creation can shapeshift into forms that are meaningful to the culture in which they appear.
Right. In other words, an evil person or a being or a third order or whatever may want to take on the shape of a snake or a reptilian just to scare somebody.
They can shapeshift into whatever they think will frighten the culture that they are interacting with.
I hate to tell you, but we're going to shapeshift right now into a commercial. We'll be back in a moment. Hey, this is Jerry Pippin, Las Vegas, baby. It's where it's happening.
Bright light said it's gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas!
Nobody covers Las Vegas like Jerry Pippin. Check out the people and features behind the bright lights at jerrypippin.com.
We're back in the background of bumper music. We have an old story on the medieval tune called Greensleeves, and the reason we played that and at this point is because back in those days, in medieval times, and you talked about the Muslim belief and also Ireland and everything else, there were ways they dealt with these things, dragons, etc., etc. They might think they were. Today we're little gray guys. Why is it different?
Well, I have not met any dragons.
You got a good point there.
But the Muslims perceive them as creatures that want to sexually harass them. The Irish perceive them as creatures that want to take their babies and leave the little fairy baby in his place, you know, a little sickly little thing that dies, but to take their baby away and to do, you know, to get Irish women to come and nurse their babies in the fairy world.
Well,
that's their sexual harassment.
Yeah,
the Irish, of course, are very, you know, they are not... they are not open in their sexual behavior like the Muslims are.
Now, and you know, you're describing that take that to modern times, that sounds like the story of hybrids that people talk about, you know, taking your baby, or, I mean, same type of general story.
Yes. Now, I personally have investigated reports of hybrids. You know, people will tell me, well, I am a hybrid. And I said, well, let's go and have your DNA checked.
I've never met anybody that said that, so people actually tell you that.
A couple, yes.
Okay.
And I have said, well, let's have your DNA checked and see if you have non-human DNA. They will not do it. And also, there have been reports of missing fetuses that I have investigated right down to the source, and everything I have investigated, reports of missing fetuses, turn out to be normal gynecological abnormalities, which have ended terminated the pregnancy.
So you're not ready to buy into this hybrid stuff at all?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
No, I'm not. But like the incubi.
Well, you know, I see these people, and they seem so sincere when they tell me.
They are very sincere, and it worries me desperately because I believe that they are being deceived by this order of creation. For what reason they want to harass us, I don't know. I have a speculation, but I have no data as to why the order of creation wants to harass us so.
Do you think we're going to let her off the air, folks, without asking her about her speculation? You said you have one. What do you think the deal is?
Well, people ask me, well, if this is true, if the alien abductors are not extraterrestrials from physical spacecraft, why are they bothering us? The only thing that makes any sense to me, and this is sheer speculation, is that this order of creation, according to philosophical and historical texts down through the centuries, indicates that... I've lost my train of thought.
No, we're talking about the speculation of what these, you know...
Indicates that they were created after the angels. You see, the angels were created
then
first.
Then you do buy into the idea of angels.
Oh, I do. Oh, okay. I do. Angels, all sorts of
orders. So when you talked to me last time, we talked about devils and angels, you weren't saying that I was completely wrong. I was just wrong on the hypothesis.
No, but the angels,
you
know, some of the angels fell from heaven and became what we call devils in this country.
Yes.
We also call them demons in this country. But then the creation of the so-called jinns or she or whatever you want to call them, incubi, they're called different names in different cultures. They were apparently given this earth to live on, but hidden in another dimension other than physical space-time. Then the creation of mankind to come and live here too. And I just wonder if maybe this other order of creation resented are taking over the earth.
And so that might be your speculation. They're up to mischievous things because they're a little upset that we moved in.
That's it's something that's come to me very recently because so many people have asked me, well, why do they harass us if they aren't, you know, occupants from UFOs?
Just for the sheer pleasure of it, probably. No, I mean, you could be right, though.
Uh-huh. Sheer pleasure, of course.
Yeah, you're right. Well, they would get pleasure out of that because they're already resenting the whole idea.
Mm-hmm.
So the better angels amongst us or the worst angels amongst us is no longer just a saying for a writer. You really believe that they're here, huh? These angels? Do they have an influence?
I believe in angels. I believe in guardian angels.
Okay.
I also believe.
That's what I'm getting to. I want to find out about these guardian angels.
Oh yes.
Well, tell me.
I have a guardian angel.
How do you know?
Well, I can feel him.
We'll be right back here, folks, and we're going to wrap this up. We're going to find out about our guardian angel. And most of the audience out there thinks they're guardian angels, and I may have one, too. I've certainly had a lot of blessings recently.
Oh.
We'll be back.
This is great to get to.
Well, we're back, and Ann Gruffel, we're going to wrap this up. We've got about 6 minutes left. Let's talk about guardian angels and angels in general here. Do you have something in the book about that?
I have a technique called appeal to spiritual personages.
Mm-hmm.
And the Muslims, for example, they believe firmly in jinns. I've spoken to Muslims in Los Angeles who believe firmly in jinns, and they can't understand why Americans call the jinns occupants from UFOs. They say they're not occupants from UFOs, they're jinns. They get rid of them with the name of Allah, you see. And the jinn vanishes. But a more powerful technique is appeal to the Archangel Michael, who apparently has some charge of the human race.
New Age ideas, I use that term loosely because I don't know what really to describe it. It confuses a lot of these issues that we've been talking about angels and all of that. I don't know. I really can't personally put a handle on it, on how you feel pretty comfortable in what you believe in it, I can tell.
Well, you see, I'm a Roman Catholic, a practicing mm-hmm. Roman Catholic, and I go by a doctrine, you see. My basic beliefs are the doctrine of the Catholic Church, and one of the doctrines of the Catholic Church is that angels were created by God to love and serve him, but also to act as messengers or as guardians of mankind. And that is where our guardian angels come from. We are supposed to each have a guardian angel or two to help us out.
And we've all heard the stories about I was driving along the highway and all of a sudden I had an urge to speed up and I went up to 90 miles an hour and then looked behind the intersection and car came flashing out of there without the stop sign or whatever.
Exactly.
So I understand the guardian angel concept. I guess you mm-hmm. have to just really listen to what your thoughts or your conscience, or how does this work? How do they communicate with you, or do they?
My guardian angel does not really communicate.
Okay.
No, but I just feel him. But I want to tell you that my basic beliefs are the Catholic doctrine, but they have spread far beyond, because I have been told by Catholic theologians that I am able to research anything that I want to research, that there is nothing forbidden to research for a Catholic, unlike some fundamentalist Christians who think that everything that is not in the Bible is demonic. I do not think that way.
I just did a show recently about the UFO research information at the Vatican. So, I mean, we keep hearing about
this.
So.
Yes.
So
it's wonderful.
It's been all kinds of stories about whether there's a contact with the Vatican and on and on. You've heard all those stories as well. We only have a couple more minutes here. I want to talk to you in general terms, and if there's something that we've left out that you think you ought to bring up our audience to speed, please do, about this book.
Well, I would like to know that How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction is available easily on Amazon.com, and also from the publisher on a print-on-demand basis now. And through bookstores on a print-on-demand basis.
Okay, good.
Still available.
Good. Now, what are you doing? You were with MUFON. Are you still with MUFON or not?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you were with NICAP before that. MUFON seems to be, they were waning for a little while as far as attention, but they seem to be back pretty much. They seem to be growing again.
Well, John Schuessler is a very good director.
Mm-hmm.
And Well, we have hope that the internet will not interfere too much with us.
I have one of our producers, not Roberta, but another one, Larry Dickin, has talked to me about MUFON, and he says he seems to notice a shift in some of their ideas from earlier. He seemed to think they were too conservative at one time.
I don't think you can be too conservative in researching UFOs. I think you have to have a strict scientific methodology like James McDonald had. There's far too many ideas in the UFO research field at this time that are being presented as theories or fact. And in fact, most of them are just speculation or mere hypotheses. And we must draw back to the strict scientific methodology.
Words of wisdom there from Ann Druffel as we wrap up the show tonight. Thanks very much, Ann. It's a pleasure meeting you in person.